Hi everyone, it's David here. And before we get into this week's episode of the podcast, I wanted to highlight that we recorded this episode and some of the later episodes that you'll hear in this series before the coronavirus situation escalated. It's a worrying and uncertain time for all of us. So I just wanted to recognise that and say to each and every listener, stay well, stay healthy, and try to keep positive. We'll keep making the show, if we can, throughout the crisis as it unfurls. I hope it provides some respite, albeit brief, from the situation. Okay, on with the show.
Hi everyone, I'm David Green. Welcome to episode 3 of series 7 of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. The field of people analytics made significant progress in the last 5 years and was recently recognised by LinkedIn in its Global Talent Trend Report as one of 4 key trends reshaping the way organisations recruit and retain its people. Whilst people analytics has travelled far, it still has a long way to go. Challenges abound on topics like ethics, upskilling HR, and scaling people analytics across the organisation. My guest today agrees. As founder and CEO of Cruncher, Dirk Jonker has been working in the people analytics field for more than a decade and has helped numerous clients to build, operationalise and scale people analytics in their companies. In our conversation, Dirk and I will discuss why people analytics needs to behave more like a startup. We'll talk about how to bring people analytics to scale, and we'll look at some of the key considerations for organisations that are looking to build their own technology to aggregate and visualise people data. We'll also look at why many organisations' approach to upskilling HR is doomed to failure. And finally, as with all our guests in Series 7, we'll look at whether AI and automation is a threat or an opportunity for HR. This episode is a must-listen for anyone in a workforce or people analytics role, those involved in buying or developing HR technology in their organisations, and any HR or business professional seeking to understand more about the people analytics field. Before we get started, a brief word from our sponsor for Series 7 of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. Cruncher is a self-service solution for workforce reporting, people analytics and workforce planning. The best thing about Cruncher? It's simple. The solution is designed to guide HR professionals through their data to discover the real story. Cruncher works in over 35 countries worldwide, with large companies that typically have more than 20,000 employees. Learn more about guided people analytics and their unique adoption strategies at cruncherapps.com. That's crunch, letter R, apps, all one word, .com. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Dirk Jonker, the founder and CEO of Cruncher, to the Digital HR Leaders podcast. Great to have you, Dirk.
Thanks for having me.
Would you like to just give listeners a quick introduction to yourself and your background?
Sure. So, I'm Dirk. I'm super fanatic about people analytics, and this started for me 15 years ago. I used to work as a consulting actuary, and most of my colleagues ended up in insurance companies or retirement funds. But if you really look at the core of what an actuary does, it's basically translating uncertain business scenarios into data and insights today to make really big decisions. And that is really what I loved. And I started to become really curious to see if you could use the same elegant mathematics on the data that companies already sit on to give HR the opportunity to influence business success way beyond their HR function. So basically, this was my dream. And I took 2 suitcases, went off to New York with a one-way ticket, and learned that from the best people on how to basically do business restructuring, business optimization, and constantly saw the link between we have here the people data, the business data, elegant mathematics, and how can we use this to make impact. So on the personal side, it went also well. So I met my wife there, got twins, and then moved back to Amsterdam, where I'm originally from, as you can hear by the accent maybe.
So I think we probably both agree that doing analytics on people data is probably a bit more interesting than doing it on insurance data and financial data.
I mean the concepts are the same, I really find a lot of joy in using exactly the same type of mathematics and use it on different new fields.
Well, we both, as you said, you've been in the space for a while now. We've both been in space for quite a while, and my sense is that people analytics has come a long way. But as we were talking about when we were prepping for this last week, we both feel it's got quite a long way to go. You know, what's your view on the state of people analytics today?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we've come a long way. Every week there is an HR analytics conference somewhere out in the world. At universities, you can do now fantastic education. And we've seen fantastic examples in the world, also thanks to you as a rainmaker, basically, in HR analytics.
Oh, thank you.
It is true. But I also feel that we're getting a bit stuck, that we jump from hype to hype. So we just talked about the HR tech conferences, basically, that we've been doing for the last 7 years. 7 years ago, it was all about, hey, what do you do? This sounds interesting. The next year, it was about, hey, how do you go beyond reporting? What kind of dashboarding do you provide? Then suddenly, it was the age of AI. What do you do with machine learning? Now, it's all about O&A. So we jump from hype to hype. But basically, we forget one important thing, and that is basically to show return on investments.
Yeah. And I think we're certainly seeing some of the work that we're doing, that more and more organizations, as they reach a certain level of maturity, they actually start thinking, how do we turn some of this work that we're doing, and actually do we get tangible business outcomes from it? And I think if there is a big place for people analytics to learn, it's probably there, I think.
Yeah, totally agreed. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, the whole projects that everybody did are super useful because it showed the potential. But maybe we can make a comparison to you know, startups, how they build. They also have an idea. They do some prototyping. And then there comes a moment, you know, when they decide either we're going to do this for real or we're going to, you know, close this project and move to something else. We pivot. So I feel that this is really the time for HR to say, well, thank you very much, HR leadership, for the seed investment. We built a team of 5-6 people. We had the opportunity to do fantastic projects. But now, and we demonstrated basically potential, but now it is time to reconsider how the target interaction model is going to be.
Yeah.
And that's important. And that is really where I see companies struggling with.
And I think we all know there's companies out there that are kind of leading the way on people analytics, and maybe what they've done differently to those that are still, as you said, around 5 or 6 people, they have actually demonstrated that value. They've got more investment and they demonstrate even more value and get more investment. It's cyclical, I guess. So we see companies obviously like Microsoft, like IBM, like some of the big banks who've got reasonably large teams now, and they're able to scale what they effectively are doing. So as you said, it's kind of moving from that kind of project mentality to a product mentality.
Yeah, exactly. But even very big financial institutions, they run into challenges. And let's compare this to building a product, because that's basically what they do, right? You go from project to product to really get scale in the organization. So they get investments because they focus on very interesting projects that generate business value. But then the question is basically how to really scale, because even though you have like 10 or 15 or maybe even 20 people, the impact that you can make without proper product or technology is just those 15 people times 8 hours in a day times 260 working days in a year.
Yeah.
So the question is how to scale this to the broad field HR to make this accessible. And there I see that even large financial organizations are struggling. Why? Maybe compare this to wobbling stones. You know, we're at the beach. We both have kids. And the thing that kids do is they take stones and put another stone and put another stone and another stone. And they make these beautiful architectural structures. This is what HR does exactly the same. So they have payroll, another payroll, another payroll. They put a workday or success factors or whatever on top. Then they feel that they need some kind of reporting mechanism because they want to generate value. So they put a data extraction layer. Then they put a database. Then they put another tool for, a BI tool to generate insights. Then there is another tool on top which basically helps to analyze this data a bit deeper. So from dashboarding to analysis. And this starts to wobble a bit.
Yep.
And the more pressure we put on top of this top stone, the more people we land in people analytics, the more people we give access to this, the more interesting the data get, it starts to break down. And this is exactly what I've seen in the last 3 months with two very major firms.
Yeah.
So it is time to reconsider and rethink how we do people analytics.
Okay. And what would be your tips around how you would rethink doing people analytics?
All right. So the first thing, Mercer wrote a beautiful article which says Tim before Tom. And it's target interacting model before target operating model. So why is this? First, we need to rethink on how and who are basically going to use the people insights that people analytics generates in 3 or 4 years from now. To me, it's basically the managers. Why managers? Well, because they manage teams. Yeah. So they need to have very simple, actionable insights. It's the managers of managers. They don't need to see all the employee details, but they want to see the people performance of their managers to coach them. It is so for that, we need to have some kind of infrastructure to talk to these managers, to get feedback, to reinforce learning, basically. So if this is the case, if we really want to push it way beyond HR, then we need to think back on what do we need today and what do we need to build today.
Yeah.
And in product, we call it refactoring. We do that every year. So every year, we break down what we built at Cruncher and we rebuild it for speed, for stability. We test everything. And that is the same product mindset as what people analytics need to be. So this starts really, if we look at the tech stack, basically at its core, like, hey, we need a really fast database. Why fast database? What we're fighting, as computer scientists call it, the big O. The big O means it's some kind of order of complexity.
Yeah.
If you do a very simple regression analysis, or you just want to have turnover by function over the course of 3-4 years, that's expensive. It becomes even more expensive if you also want to do this by age, by gender, etc. So you need to have very strict and a very stable architecture at its core. Then you need a very fast layer on top to access this data in a very consistent way, to harmonize definitions, etc. Then on top, we have the authorizations, because you know, the GDPR police comes every now and then and they say, hey, you know, this HR person left the building. What did this person do for the last 5 years?
Yeah.
So you really need to think product, basically, to bring this to scale. So that's one thing, product. I always like to talk about tech and touch.
Yeah.
Because it's not only technology or not only product, but it's also the touch. You can have great insights, but if you don't know how to do what to do with it, then you may still make no impact. So it is about educating basically the end user on how to use this. Not how it works, but how to use it.
Yeah.
And this is very important. So again, think about the target interaction model. Then plan back on what kind of infrastructure I need. And again, the wobbly stones don't work anymore. They're too slow. You cannot authorize. And
it's a risk,
isn't it? It's a super risk. Yeah. I mean, again, these two big companies, I mean, their reporting broke down and they cannot trace back anymore what went wrong. It was untested and they discovered that they were sending wrong results to the business.
Yeah, not good for reputation.
It is not. Amongst other things. It is not. But yeah. It's a consequence of just adding on top, on top, yeah. on top, on top, on top, and moving from one hype to the other.
Yeah.
We need to refactor our thoughts and think future.
So you see, it's more like, to summarize, where you're thinking about, think about the user.
Yeah.
Think about the user in the business, whether it's a manager of manager, or potentially even the employees themselves.
Exactly.
For some data, so they get return, they get some insight from providing their data. And certainly I'm seeing more and more people analytics teams now adding almost UX people within the team. Not for some of the products that they're developing, but also some of the third-party products that they're bringing in as well.
Totally.
Because, as you said, it's not just about giving it to business partners. It's about actually democratizing that data and giving it to the business and then allowing managers to take action on it.
Exactly, exactly. We did quite some research 2 years ago on what is actually going on right now. Because on one hand, you know, we have tons of HR processes that are managed in systems. They generate a lot of data, and we have beautiful BI tooling, generic. And on the other hand, we have the business, where they create value, drive change, and et cetera. And if you have all these insights, why doesn't HR still have this seat at the table? You know, this horrendous discussion that has been going on for already 20 years.
Yeah.
So something in the middle is missing. And what we felt was missing was basically that HR, I mean, you see a dashboard, but if you don't trust the underlying numbers, if you cannot play with these data to really make it real, then you will never use it. So this is a concept that we started to call guided analytics, like 2 years ago, where basically the first thing is to build trust and love with your data. I see a turnover of top potential turnover of 12.6% in a certain business unit. Could be right, could be wrong. Who are those people? Click, boom, you see the names. Then you want to have it as some kind of Rubik's Cube, right? To see multiple perspectives of these data points. And that leads basically to stories. These stories lead to interactions between managers, HR, and employees, and eventually that drives change. So, and that is exactly, I think, why we also see a lot of, indeed, UI experts entering HR. We see a lot of DevOps entering HR, basically to manage the infrastructure that runs all these models. So the prototyping is done. The great potential showing is done. Check in the box. HR did fantastic work. But now it's really time to move on.
And it's, I think, as you said, really, it's about, you know, it's about giving people the data, and actually not just giving people the data, but almost guide, as you said, guiding them on what they should do with it. What is the data telling me, and what is the action I can take, and what is the outcome that's going to result from that? And almost feeding it to managers rather than just expecting them to come to the conclusion themselves.
Exactly. It's about injecting these data points right into the workflow where they need it, and keep it super simple. I mean, I see that you wear a watch, basically as a step counter. HR would say, you know, walking is really good. You need to walk 10 kilometers per day. Great. But here in the UK, you know, it's 6.21 miles per day. Well, forget all of these definitions. You need to walk 10,000 steps per day.
Yeah.
And it keeps the doctor away. You know, it's a little story that will stick in your mind and you will never forget. So we need to make things simple. We're overcomplicating things. A beautiful dashboard can just be, you know, three metrics that matter.
Yeah. Rather than 30 that don't.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's much more than this elegant mathematics, which of course drove a lot of art of the possible. But now we need to quickly add different perspectives to build a product and to make it scalable.
So one of the big themes, I think, around HR at the moment is this whole process of upskilling. I think we realize that HR needs to become more data literate and more digital. When we were talking last week, you had an interesting view that you think a lot of organizations are approaching upskilling in the wrong way. You know, what are they getting wrong, and what should they do instead?
Okay, so what I think is that there is a big need for upskilling, because most of the technology and most of the dashboards and the insight that we're pushing are way too complex.
Yeah.
So my mother has a MacBook. My mother has, again, this Apple Watch. She never had any training because it's simple.
Yeah.
The second thing is that I think that most HR people are interested about people analytics. They just want to learn a bit the narrative. But they did not choose the HR profession to become data professionals. As we mentioned before, the tech and touch, you need the technology to help you to prioritize the actions, but the touch, basically the human interaction to drive change. The latter is why most people chose the profession of HR.
Yeah.
So technology needs to empower this interaction, but not change people into a way that they don't want to become.
Yeah.
So upskilling is needed now, because I think the technology and the dashboarding is too complex.
Yeah, so make it less complex, make it easy to use, and actually, I think, get over this kind of misnomer that all HR people need to become analysts, because they clearly don't.
Exactly.
There's people that with those skills that can do that. It's almost that, how can they take this data and how can it help them have better conversations with the people they're dealing with in the business or with employees? How can they almost become translators? I think we talked about this a bit last week. I mean, mm-hmm. Are you seeing more and more organizations kind of working out how they can make more of their HR professionals translators so they can take the data and have the conversations?
Yeah, but I also think that is a very intermediate step, because that's just another hype. So also this translation is needed, because the technology doesn't help us yet to take the final step. So if we really dream like 10 years ahead, right? So how do I think the target interaction model should be or could be? That is basically that the HR professional has an app, and it's basically being dispatched by some kind of center of expertise. Like, hey, David, we need to go to this unit because engagement is dropping. Turnover is picking up. This is hurting the business. Please go check it out. Talk to some people. By the way, talk to these people. And we think that these might be the reasons. You have the human conversation, and you feedback basically the intelligence back to the system. Good. So here we don't need to talk about translations. It's just about how to use these insights in order to have a conversation. When you go to Japan and you hire a car, you rent a car, then there's also no manual, basically, like, here's the ignition, here's the poke, here's the what. No, it's just three steps to start the car. Click, 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 and off you go. We need to think way simpler.
Yeah, I think even I could drive that car, perhaps. So in our work at Insight22, we're working with a lot of organizations now who have people analytics teams or are trying to grow those people analytics teams further. One of the questions we get asked a lot is around technology. Should we build technology or should we buy technology, particularly in the data aggregation or visualization space? Mm-hmm. You know, as someone who's been building technology in this area for over 6 years, I think it'd be really interesting, you know, to get your advice to those companies who are thinking of building and what approach they should consider.
Yeah. So my advice would be always start with building something yourself, because what you need is velocity. You need to fast iterate to see what the business needs.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to try a smaller dashboard to put it in front of managers, like, hey, is this actually interesting to you? Would you actually use it? And as you start to add more features, basically usage analytics to this, like, are people actually using it? Are they logging in? Then it's time basically to round up this MVP phase and reconsider the tech stack for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
So if your ambition really is in the next 3 years to onboard loads of managers or to maybe even open it up to all the HR professionals in the field, then you need to think product and you really need to think about what are the external requirements on authorization, GDPR, anonymization of leavers, etc. What are the types of questions that our users are going to ask and what kind of techniques are needed for this, how much computing power is needed.
Yeah.
And that basically describes the functional requirements. And then if you have a lot of developers available and DevOps, et cetera, then you can always build it yourself. But what we have seen is that even though you have very big teams in HR, you're always dependent on IT. Typically, HR doesn't get too much priority with IT. And this is when, you die basically of your own success. So, and this is really where most companies are at right now. They have shown success, they get traction, but they still are stuck with the HRIS, data extraction, database visualization, et cetera.
The stones again.
The stones, yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't scale. So there comes a moment where you need to reconsider. And then some people say, like, well, this dashboard, this is also something we can build. Yeah, I can also build the front end of the Google search engine, right?
Yeah.
We do that together in 2 hours. But what is behind and what is really needed to scale, that is quite difficult. It took us more than 150 man years to build what we currently have.
And I suppose what happens as well, when you get to a certain size, the amount of time that takes get taken up with doing this and maintaining it and continuing
exactly
versus what you could be doing instead.
Yes.
Whereas, and I guess you've worked with companies who've done exactly that, created that MVP, and then you've helped them get to the next level, the scaling level, by bringing Cruncher on board.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, and those are the best collaborations, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've got that knowledge there, the team there, the desire there. They've already tested that desire within the business as
exactly
well for having products like this.
Exactly.
Rather than just trying to get budget at the start, which, is, you know, as you've alluded to, is very difficult.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So can you share an example of a client that you've worked with who has built their own technology and then kind of not necessarily changed their minds, but realizes that to get to the next level, they decided to partner with Cruncher?
Yeah. So I think about 80% of our clients, they are global companies, 30, 40,000 employees and up. So let me just call out one because I'm really proud of this collaboration. It's AkzoNobel.
Yep.
They're around the world and they did a phenomenal job by not only focusing on the technology, but also a lot on the touch. End result, hundreds of HR professionals are now using the product basically on a very frequent basis. And the engagement is picking up. Most of our clients are renewing the contracts, are doubling the contracts. And this is really the proof, basically,
yes,
that it starts to work. But again, I do believe that companies need to start building something themselves. I'm also really passionate for bigger companies that think they will build themselves further to help them. We talk a lot on meetups to basically give tips and give advice. Again, it took 150 man years.
Yeah,
and a woman used to build what we currently have, and the typical company doesn't have 50 developers at their disposal for 3 years. Neither does the business want to wait.
So part of your philosophy really is to help enable the community by sharing, and then you're there if they need you at some point down the line.
Exactly. Yeah. I teach people analytics at a couple of universities, which I really, really enjoy. I speak a lot for leadership teams to inspire them on the art of the possible, but also bring them back to, hey, you got to show ROI right now and make a plan. That's really what I like to do.
I think that's good. One thing I've noticed about the people analytics space all the years I've been in it, it is naturally quite collaborative. People are curious and they want to learn at whatever stage of the people analytics journey they're on as individuals or their organizations are. And they want to share, and they want, you know, and actually, you know, with the 150 man years that you've actually spent building this product, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can share. I should think helps people. So yeah, I think that's very good. You're doing that.
Yeah. It's also the belief that you know, we need to create this open ecosystem. Since we are a data aggregator and analysis and reporting on top, we need to collaborate. So and our whole philosophy around people analytics is to show the bigger picture, basically to our end users. So even though you're working in recruiting, you need to know what the people want, for whom you are actually optimizing, what is the impact of your recruiting efforts, are these people saying, what is the quality of hire?
Yeah.
So we need to collaborate with the data creators and also with a lot of universities, because a lot of research, very fundamental research in computer science, is happening right there. And we need this power.
Yeah. So are there any other examples of how Cruncher has helped? We talked a lot about bringing people analytics to scale. Have you got any other examples of how Cruncher has helped your clients to do that?
Sure. One of the big themes nowadays is, you know, employee experience, it's future of work. So let me give you two very small examples in either space. So I really like the whole discussion around employee experience, but I think we're missing a really important element. We try to do employee experience analytics based on the data that we currently have in HRS systems. Well, this shows the behavior, but we're missing the biggest part. What do people really want in their work and their career? So we developed a little game to measure this. This is what we have deployed already more than 200 times for big companies around the world. And it's asking one simple question in a drag and drop ball sort game. What is most important to you in your work and your career? And now we use this together with extremely elegant mathematics to basically build personas and to build an employee value proposition for total rewards, for recruiting, for employer branding, to attract those people that you need to have to win tomorrow.
Can you segment that by job role or seniority and stuff like that? Can you?
We could.
Yeah.
But we also take a completely different approach that we say, okay, we can show how people are different. We can also show basically how people are the same. And this is where we use cluster analysis, basically to segment people by groups or what they find important. And that become basically the personas that HR works with.
Okay, good. Makes sense.
And that basically resulted on average in a 22% higher return on investment on the annual total reward budget. So we're not spending money anymore to items that people don't really value. Okay. The whole future of work is also big. So we mentioned financial institutions. There's a lot of compliance work coming their way with customer due diligence, really struggling. And also there again, we almost gamified the way how to do workforce planning and to make it accessible for people.
Yeah.
We can talk a lot. I mean, I'm sure we can talk for ages, including Ian, you know, on what kind of mathematics we can use and whatever. But that's a useless discussion. We need to open it up to basically all the field HR and make it accessible to them.
Yeah.
So there we basically use government agencies, we use big banks, and used driver trees basically to start speaking business language and connecting again to the data in Workday and whatever to build the plans and to basically show what's going on.
So let's look ahead. You know, we're in a new decade now, and the field, as we talked about right at the start, is moving really fast. You know, what excites you most about people analytics, and what are your biggest concerns?
What excites me most is that everybody is talking about people analytics. And we have about 1,000 very highly skilled professionals around the world that are doing projects and are open to share. My biggest concern with people analytics is that we don't get out of this MVP phase and that the business leaders with the next recession are going to say, okay, so what was the real return on investment? How much are you spending in people analytics with all those conferences and all those people that you're hiring? Maybe we should bring that a bit down. So we are at a really critical point right now that we need to show value and bring it to production. So stop talking about new hypes, make it real.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we see with a lot of organizations that sometimes there's too much focus on, you know, getting the right skills in the team, the right data and everything else. And there's been more focus on what are the problems that we're trying to solve for the business.
Yeah.
And how do we measure the impact of our insights and our interventions? And that would then answer that question that when the next recession comes, people say, well, we actually need more people analytics.
Exactly.
Rather than less.
Yeah. Everything that we need to do needs to have a direct line of sight with business outcomes. Yeah. And if we make sure that, then we
should be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this leads on to the question that we're currently asking all the guests on the show. You know, AI and automation, do you see them as an opportunity or a threat to HR? And then in your answer, you know, describe the opportunities and any threats that you see as well. I mean, there's some similarities on some of the stuff we've covered. But
Yeah. A big question. So let me try to be concise.
Yeah. It's a big question.
I think it's... by no doubt, AI and technology will definitely change the way how HR works. Some people might be scared for the change, but we will definitely overcome. It will bring so much to HR that the benefits will be amazing. We both have phones. There is a junk mail folder on there. In the beginning, you know, when Microsoft said, hey, we're going to scan your emails and we're going to put some in the junk folder, we were like, oh, that's scary, because maybe, good emails end up in the junk mail. Well, you take that as granted, because it gives so much convenience.
Yeah.
And whenever now you lose an email, oh, you check your junk every now and then, but it's okay. So we accept it. But we keep talking about everything that can go wrong. So let's get over that. Let's look at the business value that we create. The second thing is that we still talk a lot about math. And we still talk about very specific topics while we need to grow everything in balance. So let me give a quick example. Some companies are really stuck in this data discussion. We cannot do anything else because our data is not good. Well, that's the chicken and the egg, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't show how bad the data is or what you can do with the data will never improve. And to be honest, the data will never be perfect.
No.
We can hire fantastic data scientists, but if your data is not up to par and they still need to do a lot of data engineering, you will get them on board, excite them for 3 months, and then they will leave. Yeah. So we need to grow everything in balance. So tons of opportunities, but HR needs to have the game plan right for the target interaction model.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're just doing stuff.
Yeah.
They're just running around like a chicken without a head. So time to take a step back to reconsider, think the target interaction model, refactor everything that we built, and then the future is extremely bright.
And exciting as well.
Yeah, super exciting.
Super exciting. I mean, we've seen the growth of people analytics, and clearly you can't do any of this fancy stuff around artificial intelligence without having good analytics to power it.
True.
So hopefully a good future for people analytics.
Oh, for sure.
Dirk, it's been wonderful to have you as a guest on the show. How can listeners stay in touch with you and stay in touch with Cruncher?
Well, we have a website. We speak at a lot of meetups, conferences. So just ping us. I do frequent leadership meetings where I just bring some inspiration like yourself on the art of the possible. And then, things will follow.
And on social media, where's the best way for people to follow you? Is it LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, generally best. I still use a bit of Twitter, but my Twitter name is quite easy, DataDirk.
DataDirk, okay, that's easy enough. And then LinkedIn as well, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Dirk, it's been great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much
for being a guest. Thank you.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Digital HR Leaders Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. You can subscribe via your podcast app of choice. If you did enjoy listening, please do rate the show on your podcast app and share it with your friends and colleagues via social media. We rely on your feedback and support to keep being able to make this podcast. If you haven't already, do check out myhrfuture.com for the latest learning and news on the future of HR. And you can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter there too. That's all for this episode, but please make sure you tune in next week when we'll be speaking to Bruce Daisley on what business leaders want from HR. So don't miss that one, and I'll see you next time.